Kia ora, I'm Tuari Dawson, and you're listening to the Invisible Sensei podcast. The challenge with kata sometimes is not so much the practicing of it. Well, that's always a challenge. I think for me, the challenge that I'm finding of late is teaching it. And the thing about teaching something is you kind of get to see and break down your own particular practice. So for me, of late, I've got a student and a friend who is going for their yondan in a little while. And so we've been doing some work on just refreshing some of the kata, and I need the work as well. So it's a win-win situation. And one of the things we were looking at the other day was a particular kata. Which one was it? It was Seisan. I don't know if you're not a Gojuru practitioner, perhaps that kata is not familiar. I know there's a Shurinru or Shurite version of Seisan, and I think they have a common... Anyway, we're practicing this particular kata, and I learned Seisan, I would say, sometime in the... I'm going to say the late 80s. And so Seisan is kind of a Udansha kata in the sense that it's probably about, out of the 12 kata, it's probably about, I'd say 7 or 8 on the syllabus. And in my particular style and how I came up in Okinawan Gojuru Karate, you know, you learn certain kata at certain levels. Anyway, my point being, I remember emulating my sensei, and I remember emulating, at the time, we didn't have the internet. Yes, kids, there was a time when there was no internet, but I remember learning from my sensei and him talking about instructors that he'd seen do that particular kata, and it's a favourite of mine because it has limited low stances. And I have limited mobility in my knee. And also there's just something about the kata that I like, maybe because it's so short. Anyway, we're teaching the kata and we're practicing together and we're having a bit of a discussion about it. And I realize as I'm teaching this particular kata how much I am focused on how the kata looks as opposed to how the kata feels in my body. And by that I mean I'm trying to do all these things, you know, gestures, stances, pauses, lifting the tanden, all that sort of stuff, which, to be totally honest, is things that I've seen other sensei do, and I've tried to emulate that. So I've also not understood why they've done it. It just makes the kata look a lot stronger, in my humble opinion. I don't know if it makes the kata stronger, but it certainly makes it look, to my eyes, you know, more beefy and kind of strong, and you know, it looks raucous. And I was kind of reflecting that I actually don't know why I do half that stuff. And I was having a conversation the other day with my friend James Pankovic Sensei. And when I was in Okinawa in November at the Asato Dojo with him, it was noted that there were no mirrors in the dojo. No mirrors that I could admire myself in, which was difficult for my ego. And we got talking about it one day after training, and his thoughts were very similar in the sense that he wants students to feel the kata as opposed to getting caught up on how it looks and how it's presented. And I think I'm finding that as I'm teaching these kata, I'm going, oh, there's all these things that I kind of do to affect the look of power as opposed to focusing on actually developing power and stance and being able to draw up from the ground and, you know, all those good things. And so if you want to learn more about your kata, try teaching it to someone else. Also, there's a whole bunch of things that I do in the kata, like sepoe. So I was teaching the lovely Te Awa Sensei and another really good friend of ours, sepoe kata, a while back. And it was a case of do as I say, don't do as I do. So I think there were some habits that kind of crept into the way that I performed the kata. So, and because I had no one external to me who was at a level high enough that had the ranking that they could correct such high-level kata. No, I'm kidding about that. I think that I didn't realize the bad habits and the contradictions in terms of what I was saying and what I was trying to get them to do. And of course, them being two really competent, well-experienced martial artists and going, hey, you know, when you do that particular technique, you're telling us to do it this way, but you do it this way. And rather than sort of take the critique and actually look at it, I decided to get all up in my feelings about it. which Tawa Sensei, a bit later over coffee, when I had stopped being a diva, we had a really good conversation about it, and it was kind of funny. And I realised that I'd never taught seppai to anyone, because it's for where the kata sits in our syllabus, my gosh, my apologies, in our syllabus, is kind of really up there. It's one of the last kata, the higher kata, before you get to sort of the big mamajama, which is, of course, superimpei, a.k.a. pichurin. And it's always a exercise in trying to understand yourself and how your body works. And, of course, we're wanting to emulate people. Now, Miles Davis, fantastic jazz musician, he had the saying, and he talked about, he said, it took me years to learn to play like myself. And whilst the instrument is pretty standard, the way in which he chose to play it and what he was able to get out of it was very different, very different. And I think that I'm at a stage where I have to try and find myself, in the sense that I want to do the kata correctly, I want to do it justice, I want to do it with some sense of speed and power, but also I want to do it in a way which is consistent, as opposed to aesthetically how it looks. You know, I love the, you know, I beg, the tournaments and things like that, you know. But you, I think we can all agree that, you know, they're impressive, beautiful kata. And probably part of my kind of ill will is because I'm jealous. In Māori, there is a particular word, and it's hoha. Hoha. A hoha means a pain, a problem, or an issue that, you know, you just, yeah, it just troubles you. And for me, one of the biggest issues that I have had in the past has been within our dojo is certification. Getting that Udansha certificate or that Q grade, or doing something nice so you can really mark the effort of your students when they're going for a promotion, is one of the things that I really try and make a big deal of, because, you know, you want to mark that their sweat, their toil, their hard training, all those sorts of things in an appropriate way. Now, of course, you can go online and you can find a million certificates, kind of not cookie cutter certificates, some great ones out there, I'm sure. Or you can do what I do. And if you've listened to the podcast for a while, you would have heard my interview with Dan Bonato Sensei, incredible practitioner, Tang Sudo, Katori Shintoryu, amongst his many, many talents. He is also the martial calligrapher. His calligraphy, now when you watch him do calligraphy, it is actually some of the most relaxing stuff to watch. But what he does is he custom makes certificates, chops, a whole bunch of different things. And when I say chops, I don't mean, you know, like pork chops, you get what I mean, seals and things like that on certificates. And I have a friend of mine here in New Zealand who ordered a scroll for his dojo and is absolutely ecstatic about it. It's beautiful, it came in good time and was beautifully done. And so this is not a, by any way, shape or form, a paid promotion, but look, it's just quality. If you get an opportunity, click the link in the description for this podcast, use the code InvizSen, hit up Dan, check him out on Instagram under the Martial Calligrapher, and you'll see what I mean. So if you're looking for some really beautifully custom-made certificates or scrolls and all those sorts of things, he is our man. With a leather tan who will hook you up. So do check out Sensei Dan Bonato, the martial calligrapher, and I promise you, tell him I sent you. No, don't tell him I sent you, that might not be a good thing. But do check it out on Instagram, and look, if you're looking for something beautiful, he is completely the man to look for, the martial calligrapher on Instagram. I'm jealous. I'd like to have beautiful kata, but I don't. And my point for my little ramble there was that it's really important to try and figure out what's the theme, what's the kind of personality of the kata. And that may sort of sound all airy-fairy, but I honestly think that in some styles there's a collection of kata, and I see styles like Matsubayashi Shorinryu. Now, having said that, I have trained on a very, very limited basis. And so this is purely from discussions that I've had with people in Okinawa, in America, in New Zealand, and other places who do Shorinryu. And we're talking about Nagamine Sensei. And he talked about wanting to have a place where he could preserve these kata. Some of them shurite, some of them tomarite, and I'm sure there's some crossovers. And you can see that, for me, as a complete outsider and a complete novice to Shorinryu, some of those kata have completely different personalities, have completely different features, at least to me. I'm not sort of saying I am any expert whatsoever on those kata, but I think that the point I'm trying to illustrate is that if you look at any given kata, there is a theme, a feel, a personality, or a way of practicing the kata that I think if you don't identify what the essential thrust of that particular kata and the principles involved, you kind of miss the point. And I know for me, I spent a lot of years doing kata by rote. And that's how we learn kata, that we all learn kata like that. And it was my first training with Teruo Chinin Sensei, who's dearly departed now, of the Jundokan International, when I remember very nervously a group of us were doing kata. And I think we might have been something kata like Geksaidaichi. And I mean, he goes, skills get, day, yoi, and he just goes, wrong. And then I go, he goes, itch, and I turned around and did my first Jodan Aguke, block goes, wrong, and a step forward to punch, wrong. So it was a very nerve-wracking experience, and there wasn't much left of my ego by the time I got through that kata. But what he sort of instilled in us was the idea that each kata has an ebb and flow. Each kata has its own personality, and you do yourself a disservice if you don't work hard to try and discover what that is. Now, you can look up Chinin Sensei on YouTube, a very prolific sensei, beautiful kata, beautiful kobudo. I'm very lucky to have had experience and to have done a little bit of training with him. And then you look at one of his contemporaries, Higuana Morio Sensei, everyone knows who Higuana Sensei is. And they kind of came up together, although Higuana Sensei is a different body type and is a senpai to Chinin Sensei. Now, the reason I say that was because Chinin Sensei himself actually said to me, Higuana Sensei will always be my senpai in person. So people may have thoughts on that, but that's just what he told me. So there was always a level of respect, but they came up pretty much the same way in the Jundokan with Yichi Miyazato, and the difference in their kata is vast. Technically, it's the same kata, but the way in which they perform those same kata, especially around their build, their mentality, the way they like to move, Chinin Sensei was a little lighter, and you know, he was very much a gymnast. Higuana Sensei is like the roots of a tree. You know, they're both extremely powerful, but in different ways. And I think that if you watch any particular practitioner or group of practitioners in the same dojo, they're going to be doing the same kata. But the way that they do it is sometimes not even a subtle way. It's totally different. The way that they put, the way that their body moves doing the same kata and the things that they pick up, they teach, and they try to emphasize is completely different to what to any other instructors in the dojo. And, you know, as Miles Davis put it, I think at a certain point we have to ask ourselves, you know, how do I play like myself? How do I practice like myself? What do I bring to the kata? And I know there's people who change their kata radically, and I know if you look at some of my kata, you sort of go, oh yeah, I don't know if that's textbook, but it's an issue of injury and mobility and all those sorts of things for me, so I'm not holding myself up as the doyen, the role model for perfect kata. What I'm saying is that I think kata is a lifelong endeavour. And yeah, people bag it, but you know, like, I'm not here to sort of defend kata. If you're listening this long, you're probably a karate practitioner or a taekwondo practitioner or someone who does kata. And I'm not advocating changing the kata. I'm advocating changing the way that you understand, internalize, and externalize that kata. Because I think it's really important in all this, as Miles Davis has said, and I'll say it for the third and final time, it took me years to learn to play like myself. So what are you doing in your training to learn to use the instrument of kata in the best possible way?